Did you hear the comments of Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas? Wow.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, thanks, friends, for joining us today on The Line of Fire. This is Michael Brown, and it is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. I flew in from Dallas this morning. I spoke a couple days in Dallas. Many of you were listening live. Some of you got to see at the service where I spoke last night that were listening to yesterday's show. But I flew back in from Dallas, and I've just been on the road a lot, Toronto, home for a day, then Dallas. And this often happens. I'm at the airport. I'm waiting for my luggage to come in, and it's going to flash on the screen where you've just cut where the luggage is coming from. And I thought, okay, where was I? Remember, I just flew out a few hours earlier. And I was able to piece it together. Dallas, but it's good to be back home today. Here's the number to call with your Jewish-related questions, 866-348-7884. 866-34-TRUTH with any Jewish-related questions you have, and we'll take as many as possible. All right. Some major news, in case you haven't heard this. It's been widely reported on some media outlets and conspicuously absent on others. Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas recently made a speech which was laden with conspiracy-type theories against the Jews or even anti-Semitic comments. Now, remember that on the one hand, Mahmoud Abbas has worked together with Israel towards peace. On a certain level, there has been participation for security. On the other level, Mahmoud Abbas is still a Palestinian leader who in many ways is anti-Israel. Remember, he wrote his doctoral dissertation on Holocaust denial. He did not deny that it happened at all, but believed that the number 6 million and various things like that were terribly exaggerated. And you are not looking at a friend of Israel in many, many ways. And he has been especially enraged since President Trump has said we are moving our embassy to Jerusalem. And according to reports, the new leader of Saudi Arabia, Mohammed ibn Salman, known as MBS, he has basically said to the Palestinians, according to reports, accept what is being offered to you by the United States, by Israel, work out an agreement, get it together, because we're not waiting for you. In other words, we're going to be trying to do what's best in the region for us, and we are not just going to be your negotiators. So Mahmoud Abbas, in this speech, there's an article on Newsweek.com. The leader of the Palestinian Authority, Mahmoud Abbas, delivered a conspiracy theory-laden speech on Monday, claiming that the Holocaust was a result of, quote, the social behavior of the Jews. In other words, they acted in such a way that stirred up the ire of Germany and other Europeans, hence they were attacked. Now, again, his doctoral thesis denied the scope of the Holocaust, did not totally deny the Holocaust, but denied the scope of the Holocaust. Here he's saying, well, what did happen happened as a result of Jewish behavior. All right. Speaking at the first session of the Palestinian National Council since 1998 in the West Bank city of Ramallah, Abbas delivered what he called, quote, a history lesson, claiming Israel, this has been his long-term position, as I understand it, Israel was established as a European, quote, colonial project and has, quote, nothing to do with Judaism. Yeah, that this is just secular, that this is just part of European colonialism. You say, what's European colonialism got to do with anything? Well, basically, after World War I, the Middle East got divided up by European powers. You had the British Mandate, which had responsibility over what was called Palestine historically. Nations were made that didn't exist before. you had these large swaths of land. You had these tribal entities that existed. But certain nations that are there today in the Middle East, like look for the, how far back does Kuwait go, or how far back does United Arab Emirates go, or how far back does Saudi Arabia go, as distinct states. A lot of this comes out of European colonialism. So the viewpoint is, well, it's the same thing with Israel. As opposed to saying, wait, Jewish people for centuries have been saying next year in Jerusalem. Jewish people have been longing and praying for a restoration to the land. There is the position that is held to by Palestinian leaders and by radical Muslims that the Temple Mount was not actually the Temple Mount, that there's no Jewish connection there. I mean, it's a crazy rewriting of history, but it is not uncommon to find. Let me be in Arabic if we were listening. Abbas also alleged that the Holocaust, in which more than 6 million Jews were murdered by Nazi Germany and its allies, was caused by, quote, Jewish social behavior, charging interest, and financial matters. Yeah. Now, you have to understand the force of this. Why is it that there are so many Jews involved with banking and so many Jews of prominence in world finances? Well, on the one hand, there is a certain blessing and calling on the Jewish people for leadership and for positive change in the world, and we get it right. When we get it right, it's wonderful. We get it wrong, it's disastrous, okay? Like a Karl Marx, for example. Jewish heritage, long line of rabbis on both sides of the family, as I understand it. So you have him being the father of communism. But another reason that Jews are so prominent in world finance is that Jews were deprived of many jobs through history. That is, Catholic Church dominated certain areas, as there was other anti-Semitism. Jews were not allowed to just work at any job they wanted. Even Martin Luther, in his writings against the Jews, concerning the Jews and their lies, even Martin Luther spoke against Jews having certain jobs and basically living in ghettos and reduced to the worst of jobs. So there were times when the main jobs that Jews could get were in the field of money lending. So you would lend money and then you would charge interest, which now makes you all the more hated for it. So what Abbas is doing is stirring up an old anti-Semitic libel that the Jews control all the money and they're unethical and they're unscrupulous or they're overcharging interest or whatever it is, as a result of which people are angry towards the Jews and therefore want to kill them. Yeah, this is horrific stuff. But remember, he found fertile soil for these remarks. You would understand that the great bulk of the people there would be in sympathy to these types of remarks. Now, the United States has reacted properly to that. Looking at a report on worldisraelnews.com, U.S. slams Abbas's anti-Semitic rant as new low. And his Arabic name, Abu Mazen, according to Ambassador to Israel David Friedman, Abu Mazen has reached a new low in attributing the cause of massacres of Jewish people over the years to their, quote, social behavior relating to interest and banks. He said to all those who think Israel is the reason that we don't have peace, think again. And then Jason Greenblatt, who's President Trump's special representative for international negotiations, stated in a tweet that Abbas's remarks, quote, must be unconditionally condemned by all. They are very unfortunate, very distressing, excuse me, and terribly disheartening, adding that, quote, peace cannot be built on this kind of foundation. Good for Jason Greenblatt. His remarks were posted in Arabic as well. And one more item, then I want to go to your Jewish-related calls. Camera.org, which is a good place to go for reporting on Israel. Camera.org, this is the Committee for Accuracy in Middle East Reporting in America. New York Times, this is May 2nd, today's May 3rd. Updated, New York Times continues media blackout on Abbas rant. So on Wednesday evening, shortly after the publication of this original article, and 2 full days after the Abbas speech, the New York Times published a story and an editorial on the comments. But otherwise, it waited 2 days. Comments made on Monday, And you're, what, 7 hours ahead wherever a boss was bringing the remarks. So you'd have plenty of time Monday to write about it. Monday, Monday night, Tuesday, Tuesday night, Wednesday, Wednesday afternoon. They don't, according to this, do anything until Wednesday evening. So it's just interesting that the most prominent American newspaper, Cameron says, passed on the story. New York Times, normally so vigilant in its coverage of the average Arab-Israeli conflict, and which even jumped on a gossip column story focused on a recording of Sarah Netanyahu, the wife of Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu, losing her temper, didn't see this latest example of vile rhetoric by the Palestinian president as worth sharing with readers. It has been documented over the years. New York Times, BBC, other major American media outlets will be very biased in their coverage. Very biased in their coverage. They will, for example, report things in such a way, we've documented this as well, citing some documentation done by others, that if Israelis engage in a violent conflict with Palestinians, let's say there's a protest in Gaza, and I didn't monitor this in the recent protests there with Gazan civilians and combatants being killed. But, for example, they would do this, the recent conflict in Gaza. Israeli soldiers kill 7 unarmed Palestinians. It would be something like that. The Israelis are aggressively doing this, and it's active verbs. Israelis soldiers kill Palestinians. If Israelis were attacked by Palestinian terrorists, all right, and then let's say the terrorist was killed as well. Let's say the Palestinian terrorist killed 4 Israelis, and then the Palestinian terrorist was killed. It would say 5 Palestinians and Israelis killed in scuffle. You don't know who did what. Or bomb blast kills 4 Israelis. Oh, the bomb just went off. 4 Israelis killed by gunshot. It didn't tell you who did the shooting. And these are the kinds of things that when the headlines are put side by side, sometimes day by day, week by week, you think, wow, that is feeding into a biased narrative. Let the truth be told. Israel has its warts and blemishes, no doubt. And friends of Israel will tell Israel, we stand against you here. We don't believe this was right. We need you to change here. Israel is faulted like every other nation. But let's get the story out accurately. All right, we come back straight to your Jewish-related call. Stay with us.
The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to the Line of Fire, 866-348-7884 with your Jewish-related questions. There's a comment on YouTube saying, why defend Jews in Israel? They are antichrist. Well, here's God's perspective. First, I'm speaking the truth. I'm defending speaking the truth. When Israel is maligned and libeled, I'm going to speak the truth to set the record straight. Where I don't agree with Israeli policies, I'll say so. And you all know that I've said endlessly for 46 plus years that Jewish people without Jesus are as lost as anyone else. So Jewish people need Jesus to be saved. And to the extent that Jewish people reject Jesus as the Son of God, well, then, so you're, and make them therefore antichrist, then everyone who rejects Jesus as Son of God makes them antichrist. And we all seek to reach all of them with the gospel the same way. But here's the perspective that is essential that you take hold of. And Paul found it important enough that he took a major section of Romans, now 3 whole chapters in Romans, to emphasize that first, the promises that God gave still belong to the nation. Romans 9:4, they are Israelites, speaking of lost Jewish people for whom his heart breaks. They are Israelites, and to them belong, not belonged past tense, but present tense, to them belong the adoption, the glory, the covenants. The covenants are still theirs. The giving of the law, the temple service, and the promises. they still belong to the Jewish people. The God who scattered Israel is the God who has regathered Israel. And this is Paul's heart as he's explaining of the future turning of the Jewish people that will take place in Romans chapter 11, verse 28, regarding the gospel. They are enemies for your advantage. But regarding election, they are loved because of the patriarchs. For the gifts and calling of God are irrevocable. God's gracious gifts and calling are irrevocable. So God still has his hand on the Jewish people in a unique way. We have suffered much as the chosen people. We have been scattered around the world. We have been hated and outcast. We have been divinely disciplined. Satan has sought to wipe us out. Others have hated us, yet God has preserved us. God alone has restored us, all right? And the promises that God gave are based on his grace. Not only so, but the professing church has often been part of the sin against the Jewish people, part of the persecution of the Jewish people. Hence, Christians of all should show genuine love to the Jewish people. And when it comes to God bringing the Jewish people back, we support what God does, don't we? Or do we support only what the flesh does or what the devil does? No, we support what God does. And he's the only one that could have regathered the Jewish people. That's easily demonstrated scripturally. That's one point. Second point is, it's a great way for us to undo the history of anti-Semitism in the church, which goes way back in church history and has caused much Jewish suffering and shed much Jewish blood. So Christian love for Israel helps to undo that. And then thirdly, it's also a just and right thing to stand with Israel in the Middle East against those that want to slaughter Israel. 866-34-TRUTH. All right, we will start in Des Moines, Iowa. Daniel, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you. There's a new book out called The Temple by Robert Cornuke, C-O-R-N-U-K-E, that he says the temple, Solomon's temple and also Herod's temple, were down at the city of David based on Old Testament scriptures. Have you know anything about this?
Okay, I haven't read his book. I don't know him personally, nor have I followed his research, but he is friends with some of my friends who think very highly of him. That is as much as I can say about the man, because I've never looked at his work carefully. Therefore, I cannot make any extensive comments about that that would give him justice. That being said, although I understand him to be a very serious student of these things, and although he has undoubtedly put more years of effort and attention into studying these things than I have, according to everything I know, that's incorrect. According to everything I know from Jewish historians and Jewish archaeologists and others, Christian archaeologists working in the land through the decades, according to everything I know, the Temple Mount is where the temple used to be. The Kotel, the Western Wall, others call the Wailing Wall, was part of the larger temple complexes and part of Herod's temple there, you know, these outside walls, etc. So according to everything I know, tours that I've been on, listening to tour guides who go through these things meticulously, ongoing artifacts that are being discovered, according to everything I know, that position is not correct. Now, let me say this. If Bob Cornuke was on the air, he'd have answers for all those things. But I'm not convinced based on what I've seen from others. So it's an interesting theory. Some would say the third temple could be built elsewhere. You don't have to deal with the question of the Dome of the Rock and Al-Aqsa Mosque, which are currently there, that would be in the way of the temple being built. But with all respect to him, and without having examined his work personally, I don't accept that premise. And I'm not aware of any major scholarly question that's moving in that direction.
Hey, well, thank you very much.
Sure thing, Daniel. I appreciate you asking. 866-34-TRUTH. And we go to Cindy in Mason, Texas. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. My question was, and first I'd like to say that God loves the Jews first, and they are beloved of his heart. And I feel like that's where all that persecution comes from, is that the devil hates them mm-hmm. because of that, and because that they're Jesus's family, and you can't be a Christian and not love the Jews.
I'm with you on that. Obviously, as Jewish people, we've disobeyed, and we've suffered judgment because of that. And Jerusalem was destroyed for our rejection of the Messiah. So no argument about that. At the same time, yes, much of the persecution against us, much of the hatred against us is because God has chosen us and therefore has a special place in his heart. He loves every human being the same in terms of wanting us to be saved, and Jesus died for everyone the same. And yet, in terms of God's purposes, there's something special with regard to Israel. Okay, as to your question.
Okay, my question is, Jesus was born with the name Yeshua. So why did somebody change it to Jesus? And should we call him Yeshua if we are Goyim?
Yeah, no one changed it. It's that Yeshua in English is Jesus. Here, do you have a problem with me being named Michael?
No.
Well, Michael in Hebrew is Michael, okay?
I like that too.
Right. But we don't have the ch sound in English and the way it's been passed through. So here's the progression. So Yeshua in Hebrew becomes Jesus in Greek. And we know that even before the time of Jesus, if you were reading the Hebrew scriptures translated into Greek, let's say you had what's called the Septuagint. So you're reading the books of Ezra and Nehemiah, and you see the name Yeshua, okay, which occurs about 30 times in the Old Testament. It's the same name for the high priest Yehoshua. So Yeshua is short for Yehoshua, like Mike is short for Michael, all right? So you have Yeshua about 30 times. If you were reading it translated into Greek, it would be Jesus, because Greek did not have a sh sound. So we get it. It comes just like Saul is Shaul in Hebrew, or Solomon is Shlomo in Hebrew. So anything with a sh, when it came into Greek, became sa. So Shaul became Saul, and Shlomo became with an s, like Solomon. All right. So Yeshua in Greek is Jesus. Jesus via Latin, German, whichever way it goes, into English comes out as Jesus, because anybody with a Y at the beginning of their name in Hebrew is a J in English. So Josiah, Yoshia, is Josiah in English. Jeremiah, Yirmiyahu in Hebrew is Jeremiah in English. So the Y becomes a J, all right? The A sound goes from Yeshua to Jesus, just changes in the E-A sound, then the S-H becomes S. This is just, and Yeshua originally had an I-N, which you wouldn't be able to pronounce. Yeshua, very difficult to pronounce. So that doesn't exist in Greek as something that's pronounced. So it comes into English this way. So this is the right way to pronounce it in English. Now, you're perfectly free to say, boy, I love to refer to him as Yeshua. I just feel special. I feel a special connection to my Jewish Savior. Great. But just to understand, we don't say Moshe, we say Moses. We don't say Eliyahu, we say Elijah. We don't say Yochanan, we say John. We don't say Yaakov, we say Jacob. So we don't say Yitzchak, we say Isaac. So why should we just pronounce Jesus' name with the original Hebrew when we pronounce all the others differently? So that being said, Cindy, in many Messianic congregations, it's common to say Yeshua instead of Jesus as a reminder that we're talking about the Jewish Messiah. And that's great. I'm all for it. I will often speak in terms of Yeshua as I'm preaching, or as in praying sometimes relate to him as Yeshua. But since we're speaking English, this is the proper English pronunciation. If you go to my website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org, type in Yeshua, and you'll see articles and or videos that explain how we got this name and why it's perfectly appropriate to say Jesus, and it is not related to Zeus, as some people have bizarrely argued. Praise God for sending Yeshua, Jesus, into the world to save us. Important announcement when we come back. Stay right there.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. You know, as I'm getting ready for the show to start, we have the countdown. I hear it in my ears. I'm sitting here with a smile. I'm always excited, looking forward to being on the air with all of you. Just coming back from Dallas, Fort Worth, where we broadcast the last couple of days. And it was great to meet some of our regular listeners and viewers at different meetings at a service where I preached last night. So thanks for making the effort to come out, see me face to face. Thanks for others reaching out. And before I go to your calls, questions, interact with some YouTube comments, just want to remind you, I am really, really psyched about this. 1 week from today, yes, 1 week from today, so starting next Thursday night, it will be the first of our monthly online leadership forums. You know, we've never done this before. This is something you have to sign up for and register, but we're not going to have hundreds and hundreds of people. It's going to be a smaller, intimate group, and obviously you'll each be one-on-one with me in that respect. And these are things for leaders and leaders in the making. Otherwise, you're all welcome to register for this anytime in the world, as long as you coordinate the time properly to be with us. And then after I give a presentation with our interactive leadership forum, I'm then going to take key questions that you're asking and interact. So this is for you. There are so many people that want to spend time with me, and I love spending time with folks, pouring into them. I love sitting around with leaders, with students, answering questions. Look, our whole ministry is Ask Dr. Brown. We have live talk radio so that you can call and ask questions, and we can interact and have our differences and things like that. So sign up if you haven't. Tell your friends that are in leadership or leadership training. Let your pastors and others know about it. It's going to be a really, really special time. And the first week, what I'm going to be talking about is that God knows how to get your message out. God knows how to promote you. You've got something in your heart. You believe you're called by God. You open certain doors, what's right, what's wrong to do. We're going to talk about that, and I'm going to give you some stories from my own life and scriptural examples that I think will really encourage you. So be sure to go to AskDrBrown.org. Right on the homepage, look for the banner about our leadership forum. All right, do you have a Jewish-related question? I want to talk about Israel in the news in a moment, but if you have a Jewish-related question, phone lines are open, 866-348-7884. And let's see here. Let us go to, we'll start in Texas, then in Killeen, Texas, our friend Jerikia. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hello, Dr. Brown. How are you doing today?
Doing very well. Thank you.
Hey, Dr. Brown, I just wanted to seriously, you know, say that I'm really grateful for your work and what you do. You've really helped me out on a lot of theological questions, especially with your YouTube videos and your debates with Seventh-day Adventists on the Sabbath. And I just really want to thank you for all the work you've done. You seriously have truly blessed me and edified my theology.
Well, thank you, sir. I'm glad to hear that.
And Dr. Brown, my question for you is this. I've been listening to Pastor Jim Stanley, and maybe I'm just new to this and I don't really understand it fully, but from what I've listened to him say, that he believes that the only Jews that are in Jerusalem right now is the two tribes. Out of all the 12 tribes, there's only two. I believe Judah, and if I am, I may be mistaken. But the northern kingdom, he said that kingdom is lost, that none of them have returned back to Jerusalem. Is that true?
Of course not. What happened was that with the destruction of northern Israel and the exiling of many of the Israelites in 722-721 BC by the Assyrians, that many fled to the south. And we have examples, you know, for example, with Hezekiah and people coming down from the south to take refuge in Judah or to worship in a pure way there. And then we have, for example, in Josiah's day, that they send emissaries up into the north because you still had Israelites living there. Others, there was intermarrying with pagans, and that would be the origin of the Samaritans. The Samaritans claimed to be the original Israelites. But in point of fact, what happened was you had a merging of many from the north, or at least thousands and thousands from the north, coming to the south and becoming merged with the Jewish people as a whole. That's why Paul can reference, when he's giving his defense, one of his defenses in Acts, he can reference the 12 tribes of Israel who continue to serve God night and day. That's why James, Jacob, writes to the 12 tribes who are scattered abroad. So, yes, predominantly you'd have the tribe of Judah and Benjamin, and then interspersed with that Levi as well, because there are many Levites who were still part of the people. So that's three tribes right there. But then you had others from the north that came down to the south that have been part of the Jewish people ever since. And others that have been exiled around the world are part of those 12 tribes. So a good part of the 10 northern tribes were scattered, and many have been lost to history. But you have remnants of those tribes that are part of the Jewish people as a whole, and therefore living in Israel to this day. And that's really fairly common knowledge in terms of the constitution of the Jewish people, which is, again, why Paul can reference the 12 tribes as opposed to saying, well, the 10 are just gone. We only have two left. Interestingly, there are studies being done, and their rabbis, it's their whole work to go all around the world and to look for remnants of the 10 northern tribes, and to think some of them made their way into Africa, or some of them made their way into other parts of Asia and then intermarried there. So they look thoroughly African, or they look thoroughly Chinese, or they look thoroughly Indian. And are they authentically related to the 10 tribes? And there's Jewish myth about the 10 tribes being living in a mythical region beyond the mythical river. That part's just myth. But in short, if you'll just read through, for example, 1 and 2 Kings, 1 and 2 Chronicles, you'll see some from the north coming to the south. If you read through Jeremiah, even the third chapter, there's an appeal to Israelites in the north to come to the south. And remember that God constantly refers to Jacob and Israel when he's referring to his people and speaking to them, say, in the book of Jeremiah. He constantly refers to them as Jacob and Israel, not just Judah. In other words, the whole point is that God was speaking to the nation as a whole and not just the southern tribes, because those people still existed, and some existed as part of the kingdom of Judah.
Okay. Thank you very much. That really helps it out.
Great.
Thank you, Dr. Brown.
Well, my joy. Thank you, sir. 866-348-7884. We go to Grand Rapids, Michigan. Chris, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. I'm trying to figure out how much distance there is between you and replacement theologians. So you'll notice a direction to my questions, and hopefully you can answer this.
Sure.
Will only ethnic saved Jews be in the Promised Land, or will it be inhabited also by ethnic saved Gentiles? And if it's both ethnic saved Jews and ethnic saved Gentiles, isn't that pretty much saying that the church will inhabit the Promised Land? If yes, how is that different than so-called replacement theology? And also, final question related, are the land promises for eternity or only for the 1,000 years?
Okay. So let's try to break this down into separate questions. Replacement theologians, supersessionists, would fundamentally say the promises that God gave to Israel as a nation in the Old Testament no longer apply to the Jewish people as a nation. So their Jewish people can be saved like anyone else, but if God gave land promises to the Jewish people in the Old Testament, that those would not apply to today. Either they're just spiritualized, or Jesus has become the land, as Dr. Gary Burge would argue, or another way of looking at it is now it's just spiritualized, that it's inhabiting or inheriting the whole world, and it's for all believers, so everyone has a portion in that. So that I categorically differ with. I believe that the Jewish people have been promised the land as an inheritance under the Sinai covenant. There were conditions with it, but otherwise, as Paul writes in Galatians 3:17, the promise, which is 430 years before the law, is not nullified by the law. So I do believe that today God has restored the Jewish people back to the land in part. There's still more to come, and there's still Jewish unbelief. But it was never God's intent just for the Jewish people to live there alone. There were others that lived there, but it's not a matter of who's saved living there. In other words, there are going to be other people living in the land with the Jewish people. It was not exclusively theirs. There were always others with them. As far as in the future, the millennial kingdom, if we accept a thousand-year millennial reign, I understand that the promised land will be that of the Jewish people, that the nations that attack Jerusalem and the survivors of those nations will enter the millennial kingdom, that the church will be ruling and reigning with Jesus over what's happening on earth, and at the end of the 1,000 years, we move into new heavens and new earth, in which case I don't see that there's a specific promised land. So my understanding is the promises to Israel would last through the millennial kingdom, and after that, it's a new heavens and a new earth.
Okay. I promise this isn't, I mean, maybe it's kind of a gotcha question, but if the land promises are eternal and you're saying they're only 4,000 years, how do you reconcile the Old Testament promises that these things are eternal with the belief that it only fits within 1,000 years?
Yeah, the same way Olam can simply mean the most distant point. For example, the slave that would say to his master, I don't want to leave after 6 years, I want to stay on, he would serve him olam in Hebrew, forever, which would mean for the rest of his life or until the Jubilee year. And there are plenty of other things that, for example, the sacrificial system forever, that was through the generations until it reaches its fulfillment in Jesus. So basically, as long as we have this system of earth as we know it, the promises would apply. Psalm 105 says it's for 1,000 generations, it's forever. But when we move into new heaven and new earth, it seems everything's different. It's a different world, it's a different universe. Okay. And at that point, these things seem to be irrelevant, from what I can understand.
So the difference between you and replacement theology is that, in your opinion, replacement theology throws out the land promises, but you believe that 1,000 years, it will be saved Jews and saved Gentiles in the promised land?
No, in the 1,000-year kingdom, we want to understand saved Gentiles. Gentiles already saved are ruling and reigning together with Jesus. It's the Jewish people that turn when he returns that will have the promised land in the millennium, from my understanding. Hey, thanks for the questions.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome to The Line of Fire on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. One more note on Chris's call. The land promises are very prominent in Scripture. There's a note from Professor Gerald McDermott. By my counting, more than 1,000 times in the Tanakh, the land, Eretz, of Israel, is either stated or implied. Of the 250 times that covenant, Brit, is mentioned, in 70% of those instances, 177 times, covenant is either directly or indirectly connected to the land of Israel. Of the 74 times that Brit appears in the Torah, 73% of those times, 54, include the gift of the land, either explicitly or implicitly. Professor John Walvoord said, in the broad program of prophecy relating to Israel, few factors are more important than the promise to Abraham of the perpetual possession of the land. It is not only constantly reiterated in prophecies relating to the hope of Israel, but is an integral part of the call to Abraham, which begins the program. Now, some would argue this, that the Jewish people were specifically promised the land of Israel, but believers inhabit or inherit the whole earth. All right? So Israel, this is your portion. Believers get the rest of the earth. That's one way of reading it. Another way of seeing it is this, that the big question, this is debatable, Jewish salvation, the Jewish people turning to Jesus the Messiah, Romans the 11th chapter, All right. And I just didn't have a chance to get into this with the good question that Chris had asked. All right. So do we believe that the Jewish people begin to cry out, Baruch haba b'shem Adonai, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord? They're smitten with conviction. And Zechariah 12:10, he beat to Eli to share Tekaro, and they'll look to me and they've pierced. They're smitten with conviction, and they cry out, and Messiah comes, and they're caught up with the rest of the ecclesia, the rest of the believers, Jewish and Gentile together, caught up together with the Lord and return. Or is it that he, as he appears, as the Jewish people are crying out, and as he appears, okay, they look to him and are saved then, and then enter the millennial kingdom as the lead nation, but still as a people on this earth. They enter the millennium as the lead nation and fulfill their purpose of now teaching the other nations about the God of Israel, whereas those that were previously saved, Jew and Gentile believer together, we rule and reign with Jesus. So we are seated with him in the heavenly places and in some way assisting and ruling, reigning on the earth. These are many questions that remain with the millennium. My big issue is this. And by the way, some are dogmatic about it and feel sure the scriptures are clear on it. But my big issue is this, that God gave promises to the Jewish people that remained for them as Jewish people. A Jewish person without Jesus is lost. Jesus, Yeshua, is the only Savior for Jew and Gentile alike. That's why we reach Jewish people with the gospel and reach out to Jewish people day and night. Absolutely. At the same time, we understand that promises have been given, that God would keep us and preserve us as a people, that he would scatter us, that he would regather us, and at the end of the age, there will be a national turning. And no promises to the church displace that. The coming of the Messiah into the world does not cancel God's promises to Israel. It confirms God's promises to Israel. So I hope that's helpful for you, Chris, in terms of laying that out. All right, 866-34-TRUTH. Don't forget, we're going to Israel. It's going to combine the best of two worlds. It's going to combine a fabulous tour that will stay with you for the rest of your life and impact you and change your perspective and enrich you. And it will also combine teaching I'll be doing at certain sites and nightly meetings where we'll worship together, where I'll do Q&A with you, where you'll go and do radio with me select times. So it's going to be a really, really special time. We're calling it Holy Fire in the Holy Land. But sign up now. We have limited space because you have a bus that fills. We have limited space. So sign up today. The tour is in February, which is coming quicker than you realize. Holy Fire in the Holy Land. It's on my website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. You'll find it right there, one of the banners on the homepage. All right, we go to Dan in Fairbanks, Alaska. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. Hey, it's a real honor. Hey, I know you're going to speak at the Christ at the Checkpoint end of May. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if you'd just talk a little bit about that. And I guess specifically my question is the why of the seeming spreading of this replacement theology, or more and more Christians in this country seeming to get on board with that.
And so again,
I'm wondering if
just want to take one second. Let me just take one second. Again, friends, many people that hold to replacement theology don't like that term, but it has been used historically, and it is descriptive. Replacement theology or supersessionism, that the church has superseded Israel in God's purposes, or that the church has replaced Israel in God's purposes. Dr. Gary DeMar said he didn't like the term when we did a debate dialogue and said, look, the ecclesia, that's what the Old Testament Israel was called. They were the congregation of God. Now all believers are part of the ecclesia. It's not replacement, it's expansion. But in the end, if the promises that were once given to Israel are now applied to the church, to only believers in Jesus, and they no longer apply to the nation of Israel, then that is replacement. It's supersessionism. Some call it inclusion theology. Some call it fulfillment theology. Same difference. Okay, back to you.
Yeah, so my question is, do you think that most of it's coming from ignorance or indifference, or is there a darker underside to the whole movement? I I only know one of the, or familiar with one of the other speakers, a fellow that thinks that God is a monster for sacrificing his son for our redemption.
And yeah, Brian Zahn, who would say, right, it's cosmic child abuse, substitutionary atonement. So he and I debated that, and I'm eager to see what he has to say when I get there. Okay, so number one, there's tremendous controversy over me going to the conference at all, Christ at the Checkpoint. For those that want to find out why I'm going and my open appeal to the conference organizers, go to AskDrBrown.org and search for Checkpoint. Go to the digital library, AskDrBrown.org, search for Checkpoint. I'm explaining why I'm going. It is a strongly pro-Palestinian, in that sense, anti-Israel conference. I have Israeli friends that boycott the conference because they say it is not a conference of reconciliation at all. It is Israel bashing. It is based on replacement theology and hostility to Jewish people in the land and just highlighting Palestinian suffering as if it's only evil Israel. I have met Christian friends that went over excited to meet the leaders at Bethlehem Bible College who host Christ at the Checkpoint. And they have been upset. They said, I went to work with Palestinians and found tremendous hostility to Israel. I couldn't work with them. So there are Messianic Jews not happy with me going. And they say, your going legitimizes it. I have been asked with the most grace you could imagine by the conference organizers to come as a dissenting voice. All right? I am going as a dissenting voice, and I will shout out my dissent in protest for the world to hear and see, at the same time doing my best to listen to what they have to say. We have been presented with a platform to speak to the hundreds of people that will be there and the thousands that are going to be watching in other formats around the world online. So I have a platform to speak to people that differ, and I want to make it as plain as I can, and I'm openly calling on them to renounce their wrong theology and their wrong attitudes towards Israel, without whitewashing Israel or denying that Israel is guilty of sin as well. So that's number one. And folks that have trusted me over the years, trust me on this, all right? I felt the Lord wanted me to go. It's the end of May. Please be praying with us. They will have my PowerPoint weeks in advance. I'm about to send it to them. They're going to know exactly what I have to say, and they've given me carte blanche. They've given me carte blanche to address radical Islam at the conference, and I have a lot to say in love, but speaking the truth. Now, why the resurgence in replacement theology? Well, one, it's been held through much of the church. The very triumphalism of which Paul warned in Romans 11, that's been held to for much of church history, where Paul told the Gentile believers in Rome, don't boast against the branches. If you do, you forget. You don't support the root supports you. So that very arrogance based on ignorance, not understanding that the hardening of Israel was only in part, and that God's love for the nation remained and that God would turn his people and restore his people, that led to the idea that God's finished with Israel. So there's been an arrogance in church history that has been returned to. That's one thing. A second thing is that with the restoration of the Jewish people to the land, it destroyed a lot of replacement theology because it was clear God was not finished with Israel. However, now that it's become old hat, Israel's been here 70 years now, the old hostile attitudes are rising. The best case understanding is people see the centrality of Jesus, see everything fulfilled in Jesus, see emphasis on Israel going backwards, and it's just a poor reading of scripture, but one that wants to exalt Jesus, and there's no malice and no anti-Semitism and no hostility in it at all. But you'll have both, and I'm sure I'll run into both at Christ at the Checkpoint. Please pray for the wisdom and anointing of God while I'm there. Hey, go to my website, AskDrBrown.org, and click on the Consider This banner. Many are calling this our best video ever. It's the first in our Consider This series. Can you be gay and Christian? We're going to be doing one on the church separating from its Jewish roots. Go there now, AskDrBrown.org. Click on the Consider This banner. Share the video widely. We want this to go viral.